Your life doesn't just become art when a white man points his camera at it. Your art, your life has always been art, and it's always been art in your possession. It's always been yours. This is for everyone who is far away from home, but close to it at the same time. Diaspora Babes is the art you make, the art you love, and the arc of justice. We are brown, queer, struggling, thriving, too much, too loved, and too loving. My name is Amal. I'm a Yemeni-Lebanese artist currently living in Paris, and this is Diaspora Babes, love letters to myself and you. Dear Diaspora Babe, your art is all of it. I said in the episode, your art is important. When you're not producing art, you're still valuable. I know I go through cycles, which is something I want to talk more about later, but the idea that your art is all of it came to me at a time when I was having a crisis of worth or a crisis of, you know, artistic identity, when I wasn't having an easy time being able to make my work or do the things that I love. And looking at other parts of my life, like, I've just noticed that I have certain patterns that I exhibit in my life, like, moves in patterns a lot, and I go through cycles, which is something I want to talk more about later. And in those cycles, when I'm not painting or drawing or photographing, I'm usually doing other things. I lean into other aspects of my practice, what I know now to be my practice. I spend more time cooking and doing lavish meals, lavish in the sense that I've spent lots of time on them and they're delicious and multi-coursed and all sorts of things like that. Or I spend time creating herbal remedies and learning about herbs or getting to know plants and spices and building recipes or remedies in my kitchen to use for myself or my friends. I also make body care products, making conditioners or leave-in conditioners or scrubs or exfoliating scrubs and masks and stuff like that. I realize that that's all kind of part of my practice. Like, in each thing that I lean into for making or creating, like, I go into it and I have the intention of making something with, you know, like, a certain end result, whether that's pleasure or joy or health or connection or like a gift to someone that I often do through like meals and things like that. I'm definitely like a person who shows my love through food a lot. And I do that with my art too, you know, like I love painting pictures for people and then giving it to them. And doing all those things, I started to have a vision of how like all of the different things that I do are connected and are part of my practice. They're part of my art practice. My art practice doesn't just look like one thing. So I encourage you to look at all the things that you like to do and see how they're connected and see how they fit into each other and how they feed each other, and or how one of the things you do feeds you, which then feeds another practice. When you're putting pressure on yourself to do that certain thing, writing or drawing, recognize that your art is all of it. Recognize that your art is part of an underground root system connecting you to all parts of your life, as well as connecting you to the rest of the world. When I was having trouble getting out of bed in the midst of my depression, and I'd already given myself about a year of soaking in all the sleep and rest and listless time I could take, I developed certain patterns that became like a life raft or a little floaty for me to kind of like float on the surface of my depression instead of sinking to the depths. None of these involved sitting down to draw or paint, because that wasn't yet within my capacity. But I would wake up, tell Peanut I was thankful to have her. Peanut's my very small, lovely, adorable friend, dog. Then I would make my bed. And since I have a click-clack, one of those convertible beds that turns into a couch, I would make sure to make it into a couch. So even if I had the instinct to go back to bed, I could just sit on the couch, which felt energetically really different. Then I would light my favorite incense, which is oud. It's a super uplifting healing scent too. Then I would turn on Feyruz. Feyruz is morning music. I know so many people who Fairuz is what they listen to in the morning, and I always associate her clear voice with like breakfast and coffee and like the joy of a quiet morning. And this is someone who like I have a hard time, like, you know, with mornings. I'm definitely a night owl, and while I really love when I'm awake in morning, when I get the chance, I really do love mornings. It's really hard for me to access them. But yeah, Fairuz is morning music, so I thought that was a way to make mornings more beautiful and more desirable for me to like experience. And then I would stretch and do a bit of yoga. And after that, I would have coffee. And during yoga or after yoga, I would close my eyes and do a bit of a body scan. Like, all right, how are my feet? How are my legs? How are my knees? How are my thighs? How are my hips? How's my tummy? How's my chest? How are my arms? How's my neck? How's my head? How's my heart? And then I would have coffee. And I'd put coffee after that because coffee is one of my favorite things and it's so motivating. So I would like have coffee as kind of my reward for doing all of these little steps until the steps themselves became a reward in themselves. These daily rituals might not be considered art by others, but they were my ways of accessing beauty, a bit of joy, soothing my physical form, which are all things that my art practice does for me. I found ways to access what my art gives me when doing actual drawing or painting or photographing was too much. Instead of drawing bodies, I got to know my own better through yoga. Listening to Fairuz gave me the connection to Arabic culture that I explore in a lot of my practice and made me more familiar with my lineage. And by instilling all of these practices daily, I got to the point where I was energized and inspired enough to face my sketchbook. This daily set of rituals, I didn't just arbitrarily decide this is what was good for me and this is what I was going to do. I kind of put together a sequence of actions that I noticed when I did them throughout the day or at different points made me feel really good. And I was like, okay, these make me feel good and these make me feel like a little better. So instead of just doing them sporadically, I'm going to commit to doing them all the time because they make me feel really good. I think at the base of it, we do our art because it feels good. And when we stop doing it or when we're having problems doing it, it's because that something has happened or something's become associated with it where it doesn't feel good anymore or where we think we can't have that good feeling, right? But at the base of it, I truly believe that we do our art is because, yeah, we do our art because it's the thing that makes us feel best and is truest to us, right? And when you're being like that true to yourself, you feel really good. That's just my opinion on it. I'm doing a takeover at Lest Magazine on Instagram right now. Lest has been one of my favorite publications, like internet platforms or places on Instagram, or just my favorite kind of arts cultural production since I graduated college. Technically a biannual journal of new erotica, as they call it. So they publish a magazine or a zine on risograph print twice a year. But most of my experience with Lest is through Instagram, since I've been out of the country for most of the time. And like, I haven't been able to get one of the magazines. Like, I think I ordered one once and it didn't actually, the mail lost it. So it was really annoying. And I thought, okay, I'll just have to wait until I'm back in the US to actually buy one of the publications. But the really cool thing about Lest is they have different people do quote unquote takeovers every week on their Instagram. So every week you have a new, like, really amazing, interesting, cool person who's usually queer and usually an artist and often a person of color. I would say like 60 to 80% of the people who do takeovers are POC. And they give you a slice of insight into their life, like quote unquote mundane things. That's very much kind of like a high low sort of things. People talk about their experience, about their living, about their feelings, about their challenges. They give little snapshots and images of their daily lives, and it's such an incredible experience, I think, for me, because it really values the small moments of your life. Yeah, it's a space where people are allowed to value like the specific small things in their life that are particular to them, that they really like, that really stand out to them and that they really notice. And they're able to share that on a platform with other people. And yeah, it's so touching. It's so touching. And again, I'm connecting this to your art is all of it, because it's like Lest offers kind of all of it. It offers all of it, you know? It offers all of it as valuable. And obviously, you know, people aren't putting their everything on it, right? Like Instagram is curated and people choose to post certain things, but I've also found that it's a pretty genuine kind of platform where people really choose to share things that are authentic to them. And obviously not everyone, you know, does that equally or chooses to do that equally. But that's the amazing thing about having a new person do it every week, with, you know, a couple of people coming back to do second or third takeovers, which is that you get just a variety of perspectives on how people see their lives and their bodies and their sexuality. And together, like collectively, it offers a beautiful fabric of experiences and perspectives that's super encompassing. And that feels really holistic, as I was saying. Holistic, feeling whole. I think that's what this is about. Like, your art is all of it. It's about accepting yourself as whole and accepting kind of like your whole self, but your wholeness rather. It's like seeing and valuing your wholeness and realizing that your art is kind of part of it. Your environment, the way you find and create a place that suits you most, you really are a plant, boo. You gotta find a place with the optimal sun, water, and optimal conditions for you to grow and thrive. And yours might not be the same as someone else's. Like, different plants require different places to thrive and be amazing. And it takes work to figure out, like, you know, what you need to optimally thrive. Your sexy selfies, where you imagine the self you want to be and celebrate the self that you are, that's part of your practice. The connections that you foster with those around you, those in turn like feed you and feed your practice. Like, this process, Diaspora Babes, has all been about, like, has been about connecting with my comrades and you know, talking through the ideas with them and bringing it through this. And so is my art practice. My art practice is so involved with, like, my friends, whether it's portraits or watercolor sketches or drawings, or it's really all of it. I mean, the name Diaspora Babes came from when I was trying to think about a term that kind of described my friends, right? And I was like, well, we're all POC. A lot of our parents are immigrants, or we have this connection to some place that, you know, isn't here, and we're moving a lot. We're like displaced. We're all creating and creative and finding ways to celebrate ourselves and each other. And I was like, oh shit, we're in diaspora, and we're babes, right? And that just, you know, became the appropriate term for me to kind of encompass, like, and that for me became an appropriate term to encompass the facets of socio-historical cultural positioning, as well as creativeness and lusciousness, right? It's kind of a way to kind of marry or embalm all of those things together. Decorating your room as part of your practice, covering your body in henna or your friend's body in henna is a way to love your physical forms up and create a space of connection. That's all your practice. Think about it, though. Some of the most popular art is just white men making images of women or black and brown people just living their lives. Like, you think about it, you know what National Geographic is? It's literally white people going to, like, other places and taking photos of people just living their lives, and then suddenly it's like art, right? Or even if, you know, you're going before the invention of photography, like paintings of just women, you know, which are like the biggest kind of marker of Western art history, right, is paintings of women. That was like what male artists use, the forms of women, usually in this case, you know, excuse my kind of like focus on a socio-historical category of gender that might not like accurately encompass people now. But yeah, like it was literally like, we're gonna take these images and we're going to become artists because we're making them, or because we're depicting them, right? And the people who are being depicted aren't art by themselves or artists. It's only when it's been endowed by the touch of the great white man creator that it becomes art, right? Your life doesn't just become art when a white man points his camera at it. Your life has always been art, and it's always been art in your possession. It's always been yours. And I think there's a lot of power in coming and recognizing the creative power of you living and you just doing your thing as, yeah, and endowing it with the honor, I guess, or the value of the term art, or at least just not reserving the sort of like term art just for, you know, specific modes of creation. Visioning your own life, visioning your own potential, visioning what you want, visioning what you want in your life and when you're making things. And I'll step back, you know, not everyone likes the term art, not everyone wants to describe their stuff as art, like, that's fine, you know, go ahead, you don't, this is, like, literally just, you know, the terms that I prefer and, like, want to use. You can use whatever terms or ideologies you want to think about your life, like, you know, this is just one option or one way to think about it that, you know, I hope you might find interesting or helpful. I skipped something once I was talking to Les, so I'll go back and talk about it now. Recognizing that when you take time to make food and nourish yourself, that your brain and body have the resources to learn, speak, and create. Recognizing that the certain friend or job situation that you have that is so incredibly draining and leaves you too depleted to make your work. Realizing that by releasing your emotions through making music or dancing, you can approach your intimate relationships in a more balanced way. The way you make art or create is mirrored in other structures of your life too. And here's an example of what I mean. So I've been using this book on the recommendation of a friend called The Artist's Way, and or it's The Artist's Path. I literally always confuse it. And, you know, it's an interesting book. I really am enjoying a lot of the practices that it gives me, though it's written by this white woman who, you know, she kind of does and says a lot of white woman things. Like, if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. I don't really want to get into it right now because it's not the main topic. But anyway, one of the things that she recommends doing are artist dates. And artist dates are times that you do with just you and your inner artist, which she compares to your inner child. So your inner artist child, and you do an artist date with yourself, and it's something that you as a child would have really loved, and is just like, you know, a chance to kind of like spoil your inner child and allow that natural creativity that you have to come out. And so the first artist date I did was I made a tent fort with my bed. I loved making tent forts when I was a kid. Like, we would take, my siblings and I would take folding tables and chairs and put blankets all over them and have this little network in my living room, and we would just, you know, crawl underneath it and spend a bunch of time there and bring toys down there and chill out, and it would just be like the comfiest thing. And so I did that. I did it in my room. I moved my bed away from the wall and set up some chairs and draped a tapestry that I usually put on my bed all over. And I got down there, put a heater down there, and huddled up in the blanket fort, enveloped in the warm colors of the tapestry. And I realized, oh, this is why I liked this so much as a kid. It's because it's so womb-like. We're always trying to get back into the womb, I guess. And anyway, sitting under there watching Fantasia and listening to music, and I had my sketchbook down, though I didn't end up doing any drawing, I realized that, oh, my art is all about world making. It's all about kind of taking what you have and creating an enveloping sensory experience and inhabiting it in a way that makes you feel really safe and held and cared for in this beautiful, colorful environment. And I was like, wow, that's something that's consistent in almost all of my work, no matter what forms it takes. And it's something I was doing naturally just as a little kid, and something that I had lost kind of memory of or access to until I went and consciously did it. So Yeah. So if you look at your life, you can see like maybe you've lost touch with it, but you have the things you do in your art practice are things that you're connected to when you're not doing things that are considered quote-unquote art. I recognize that the things I draw have a way of finding themselves into my life. Not always, but often. Last week, I drew a picture of myself watering trees of my creativity or my life, you know. And I filled the branches with stickers of birds I had bought on another artist's date. And then just today, when I sat in my favorite nature spot near my house asking for inspiration for this episode, a group of birds descended on the tree in my direct line of sight, a monochrome recreation of my drawing. When I was traveling solo in Istanbul a few years ago, I painted a quick watercolor sketch of a fountain in the garden of the Topkapi Palace. And later that day, a boy who was staying at the same hostel as I was showed me a photo of the exact same view that he had taken that very same day. It was a sign of the brief romantic connection we shared. Visions and locations shared for a brief 2 days in the same place before parting. Images come to me on the page or in the world and then find their way into living, breathing flesh. Last year, I dreamed that my ex-lover told me she loved me, and 2 weeks later she said it. Every time I say I like you very much, it sounds inadequate. I've come to accept. I love you. Or when I noticed fantastical twisted figures in a drawing on a flat file in a shared art studio storage room when I was in college and noticed the name, Clover. Then 2 weeks later, I met the person who remains my partner today. I haven't really shared this, but I'm a bit of a witch, and I've realized that my art practice is intertwined with my magic practice. The way I'm best at manifesting or channeling is by drawing, or painting, or performing, or dancing, or cooking, or taking care of my body, or loving my friends, or loving my lovers. So I hope you take a look and take an account of your life and see the bits of magic that you have scattered like a constellation in your life, and that by mapping those stars, you can see a little bit, you can see the larger picture of your art practice and how they're all connected. Your art is all of it. Hi, so it's Friday, so happy Goddess Day. Fridays are something I recognize every week is Goddess Day, because Friday is, you know, from I think the Norse, like Freya, who was one of the goddesses, like Freya Day, and in, you know, the Latin languages or the Romance languages, it's like Vendredi, which has to do with Venus. So Friday just has a lot of traditional associations with the goddess and stuff like that. And so I kind of recognize it every week. It's kind of become part of my practice. Goddess Day isn't about being female or feminine for me. It's about recognizing your body and your form and lavishing your material form with love. I like to do little things that make me feel like extra luxurious on this day and like abundant and happy. And like when I do those things, I get this warm little glow and it kind of permeates my whole body. And I'm sure people see it like, and you know, I almost imagine it as like pink or yellow light that kind of like surrounds my body. And like when I do those things, like take the really luxurious shower and scrub myself up and put oil on and put on nice clothes and eat some good food and, you know, hold the person I love and tell them I love them and, you know, all of those things. So if you want to observe Goddess Day with me today, then here's just a little thing you can do. If you're, you know, just do this by yourself now or later if you'd like, but you can just find some place, sit down and take your feet in your hands and hold them, notice them, you know, and say, thank you, feet. Thank you for carrying me everywhere. Then take your calves in your hand and rub them maybe they're sore and say, you know, thank you, calves. And do the same to your luscious thighs and hold your hips and like, thank you, hips. Thank you for holding my weight. And then you can hold your belly if you want, and your belly is like, you know, you might want to give extra love to your belly. Like, a lot of people have a lot of hate for their bellies, and you know, I know that's something I struggle with and have struggled with for a long time. So just, you know, wherever you feel like, you know, you're extra insecure about or you struggle with, just send some love there and be like, thank you, tummy. Thanks for digesting my food and getting me through the day. And hold your chest, your heart. And you're like, thank you, heart. If you want to thank your boobies, say thank you, boobies, or thank you, tits, or thank you, chest, or whatever you call your area up there. Hold your shoulders. Thank you, shoulders. Give them a little squeeze. You can take your neck and rub it and notice the tension and maybe release a little bit of it and say, thank you, neck. Thanks for holding my head up. You can take your temples and your face in your hands and rub it a little bit and notice the kind of tension you might be holding there and let it go a little bit and say, thank you. Thank you, face. Thank you, temples. You can do that to each individual part of your face if you'd like to. Thank you, eyes. Thank you, nose. Thank you, mouth. And do it to your scalp. Like, scalp massages are some of my favorite things in the world. Give yourself a little scalp rub and say, thank you, scalp. Thank you, head. Thanks for doing a lot of thinking and for keeping me breathing and doing all the things that you do. So yeah. And then after that, you can just wrap your arms around yourself and hold yourself. Give yourself a hug. And hold that for as long as you want. When you're finished, you can just reach up. Reach up to the sky. Spread your hands out and just feel like the energy from around you coming down, filling up your body. And if your feet are on the ground, feel the energy from down there, from the earth coming up and filling your body. And that's that. Happy Goddess Day, goddesses, and I will talk to you next week. Music you're listening to is by Leila Omaran. You can follow Diaspora Babes on Instagram at Diaspora Babes. My personal Instagram account is You Can Do It Habibi. Keep safe, keep faith. Until next time.